Welcome to Grounding, conversations on mental health and Mother Earth. I'm Sarah Aronson, a climate-aware therapist and a bonus parent to three young adults.
And I'm Jake Birch, grounding producer and father to three small children. In this series, we work to better understand the emotional experiences we have as we react to the changing climate around us.
You're probably noticing we're doing things a little differently today. I'll be hosting alongside Jake for a change.
Thanks for letting me share the wheel this time, Sarah.
It's good to be in the same room together, Jake. Today, we'll be exploring what it means to be a caregiver or caretaker during a time when overwhelm is common and avoidance is natural. How do we take care of ourselves and each other, our children and our planet, during this time of great change?
We're talking mostly about parents in this episode, but these ideas are relevant to anyone in a caregiving position. Doggy dads and moms, siblings, children of aging parents. And guiding us through the nuances of this important job is guest Rebecca Weston, a climate-aware therapist in New York and co-president of the Climate Psychology Alliance North America, and a mother to two not-so-little kids.
And I had the chance to speak with Winona Bateman, a mother and the founder of Families for a Livable Climate, who had this to say about the missing piece in climate activism.
I've often said that the climate crisis is a crisis of community and a crisis of connection. And we need to be talking to each other about what we care about, what we're seeing happening, what we're afraid of losing, and what we'd like the future to look like for our children.
How did Families for a Livable Climate come to be?
Well, about 5 years ago, I had read the 1.5 degree report from the IPCC, and I had a hard night. And I woke up in the morning and I felt this huge amount of determination and also anger, and decided I was going to find a way to use the kind of freedom I had at the time. I was only working part-time. I had some extra time and try to be part of the solution. And so it took a little bit, but I decided that a family-centered organization was something that was needed, that lens wasn't in the climate space in Montana so much. And that's how Families was born. Our mission is to create community for climate action in Montana. And we do that through family-oriented educational opportunities, events, advocacy opportunities, and supporting new leaders, new climate parent leaders. And we do advocacy work around energy and basically cause a ruckus and raise awareness about climate through events and conversations.
I'm so impressed by her response to those feelings. I can't say I would have the same impulse. I get easily overwhelmed raising kids, and that's without even considering this pressing climate crisis.
And when you spoke with Rebecca, Jake, she also talked about navigating her own awareness and engagement in the climate movement when she was a new mom.
I think what was behind my refusal for a while to take on the issue of climate change was my own fear. My father would give me books every single gift-giving occasion about climate change and about species loss and about biodiversity. And I literally put them at the bottom of my bookshelf because I was at a stage where I was raising very young kids. And I would literally get to page 5 or 6 and I would start having heart palpitations and I would start having catastrophic thoughts and I would feel completely helpless and overwhelmed. And I closed the book. And honestly, I think that that's what a lot of people do. And I don't blame myself for doing that. I had no equipment, no apparatus with which to manage that panic.
I'd love to hear the messaging that you offer caregivers and adults to empower them to engage.
I think the most important thing when I talk to parents and caregivers is first just to meet them where they are and say, whatever your response has been up to this point is completely understandable because it is an overwhelming, really hard issue. It's painful to look at. It's scary. And that creates a lot of big feelings, especially in parents and caregivers who are thinking about the future of their children. But we need you. We need your unique talents. We need your unique perspective, your story. If all you have is 5 minutes to make a call, we need lots of voices. So we need you. And our kids are depending on us. And we can't do it alone. It's always an invitation into community. If it's our community, great. If it's another community, just finding a place, other people who care and connecting with them. Action uplifts and sustains parents. When they're having a hard day, they have a community or someone to talk to about that. They have a place to be and they feel effective. They feel like they're doing something.
Caregiving is a broad topic. And while the concept of giving is baked right into the name, there's a lot you can get out of it, as Jake learned in his conversation with Rebecca.
Often caregiving feels like an act of selflessness, but you're kind of naming that there is a benefit that the caregiver derives from doing the caring.
Absolutely. I don't have to go any farther than my own relationship with my children. The sense of love and connection and what you get to see in the world as a caregiver to someone, and to see what comes alive when one has healthy love and regard and delight. You know, I think about attachment a lot. When you see the bloom of that, it brings us alive too, right? The being aliveness goes in both directions.
Though caretaking is a beautiful thing, it can also feel vulnerable. For me, and I know I've heard this from other parents too, those first few moments with a new life can be scary, especially when looking to the future. Sarah asked Winona to share about what she encountered through Families for a Livable Climate.
I wanted to get a sense of, what are you hearing on the ground from parents and families?
People are really scared, despairing, overwhelmed. And there are a lot of pressures on Montana families right now, from housing prices to prices of everything. And climate is just like, you know, to try and think about that is just really hard for folks. I also hear families really struggling with maybe a little shame and blame around, like, I'm personally not doing enough. We could be doing more, or being really obsessive about like one small thing you can do at home. And certainly I would say, do individually whatever you can and whatever uplifts your life and feels feasible, and that all of these families would choose the best climate option or the best environmental option were it available to them, you know, and they're struggling to do their best and to be a good person and citizen and parent to their kids. And it's not always easy. There aren't always good choices.
Caregiving and the accompanying responsibilities can be hard. It can be scary. It can be fulfilling and rewarding. It's a lot of things. But are there risks? Throughout her conversation with Jake, Rebecca spoke about meaning making, the way we make sense of the world around us and our place in it.
What are some risks to caretakers and caretaking? What should I have atop of mind as a caretaker to make sure I can continue to do this work?
We all reach places of exhaustion, of depletion, of needing to replenish. There's plenty of parenting that's not joyful. There's plenty of caretaking that is not joyful. But I think perhaps connected to that question of meaning again, that if we are getting into a place where we are so spent, so depleted, that we can no longer really access the value of that meaning, I think that becomes really problematic. And I think that that becomes the moment of burnout. So I think what we always need to tend to is, are we getting enough nourishment back in relational forms, especially where we feel seen and where our contribution to a world of meaning making is noticed and observed and appreciated, and then given room to then being cared for, so that we are not permanently in the caretaking role.
What are resources, specific or general, to mitigate those risks? If I'm a caretaker approaching burnout, what would you suggest for me?
I think it's really, really important to be with and among and create places where you are not alone in those feelings. When we frame it as an individualist endeavor, we will it will burn us out. I did want to just sort of say that another risk is grief. When we do look around and when we are conscious and sentient about all of these things, there are going to be waves of profound grief at what we've lost already. And we can't run from that grief either, because that grief is also the other expression of love, of what we love in the world. It is deeply sorrowful that our children have to be waging lawsuits in Montana to preserve Montana. That is, in addition to inspiring, it is also deeply, deeply sad that that's where we are. And not only do those children need support, those youth need support, permission to stop, permission to take all the other things, but we as a community need to be able to hold that grief too, because if we don't, that also becomes divested and it becomes exhausting and it becomes depleting.
Testing, testing.
Just pulled up to the Rattlesnake Trailhead. I'm here with my three kids, Goldie, Lauren, and Damien. And we're about to walk to our special COVID hang place. Should we start walking?
Yeah, let's go.
It's actually very close to the trailhead. There's this path that branches off to the right that leads down to a little secluded spot by the river. January 2020, our third son, Damien, was born. And we came back home, and shortly thereafter, COVID landed squarely in Montana. Our older two kids, their preschool was shut down. And having a newborn and knowing so little, it felt like we needed to be extra cautious. And so we went seeking kind of ways to keep ourselves engaged with the world and occupied and entertain the kids, but in a way that was safe. So we spent a lot of time in the woods, in many different woods around Missoula. It's really pretty magical to watch kids interact with the woods and see how, kind of what natural scientists they are, how naturally inquisitive they are, and how much the natural world can really captivate them.
Where did you get that balloon?
I didn't. It's a piece of grass.
Oh.
You're listening to Grounding, conversations on mental health and Mother Earth. You just heard from Jake and his kids sending an audio postcard.
Sent from the Rattlesnake, which is a place we love as a family and so many Missoulians use to recreate.
I'm glad you brought up the fact that so many people use this. One lesson we keep coming to in this series is the importance of community, from organizing effective responses to creating comfort and solidarity.
Yeah, Rebecca just spoke to the replenishing aspect of community, but there's a collective power in it as well. Here's Winona.
Community is absolutely critical to having a large and effective climate movement. To my mind, it is the missing piece. We have all the solutions. We know what we need to do to address this issue. And what we don't have yet is a massive movement toward implementing those solutions. And so community and connecting with each other is really key to that. We cannot bring someone along in terms of wanting to support policy or wanting to make on-the-ground changes in our community if we don't have trust and care and a relationship with them. And so making those relationships is super critical. There's lots of critical work out there, but the relationship piece feels really important and feels, again, like the missing piece.
Sarah, I can hear the urgency from Winona, but how do we integrate these conversations into our broader communities? Is it really as easy as just talking about it?
Well, Winona spoke to that too. I've heard you speak to the gap between how people recognize that they are impacted by climate change and whether or not they talk about it. Can you speak to that silencing gap?
There's a huge percentage of people who are worried, and there's also a huge percentage, and in Montana, it's almost the same percentage, of people who don't talk about it, or rarely or never. I think it's overwhelm. I think it's cultural division. There's a huge psychological distancing that's happening where people are like, yes, it's happening out there. It's going to affect the future, but it's not going to impact me. And I think that's just kind of a way of distancing from the issue to be like, I'm safe, I'm okay, my family's safe. And that is very understandable that you would have that reaction. You know, I can't think of another issue that impacts us so pervasively that has so much silence around it. But I mean, our livelihoods, our families' futures, our cultural and historical practices, all these things are on the line for all of us.
Rebecca echoed this idea and offered additional insight into how this gap affects us psychologically.
The vast majority of people are concerned about climate change, and yet the vast majority of people don't talk about it. And so it creates this completely false social framework that we're the only ones worried. And it's a completely false loop. No one's talking about it, so I'm the only one, so I must be kind of crazy. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to be the downer at a party. These are things we can talk about. These are things that are worth naming.
Sarah, how do we work to create mutually beneficial relationships to face these intimidating problems?
Well, let's go back to my conversation with Winona. What are some concrete skills that you bring to the table when working with parents, caregivers, and families around relationship building and having these difficult conversations?
A good rule of thumb when you're having conversations about climate is to approach the conversation so that you get to have another conversation with that person. And just using that as your frame and your guide, because it's going to change how you interact. You're going to be kind. You're going to watch your triggers. And you're going to be curious about the other person and ask them questions. One reason I love storytelling so much is that when I have a conversation with someone about climate who might not be in alignment for whatever reason, I can share a story about why I care. And I can open myself up to them and show vulnerability, not in a manipulative way, but in a real way. Because the truth is, we need everybody to address this issue. Before COVID, we would hold weekly demonstrations in solidarity with Greta Thunberg and other youth around the world. And we were outside the Missoula County Courthouse one Friday. And we were standing there with signs and visiting, and this woman came around on the sidewalk and came up to me and she said, "I work in the courthouse and I usually go in that door, but today I decided to walk around because I've never talked to a protester before." And I said, "I'm so glad you did. I'm not a protester. I'm just a mom who's worried about her kid's future." And her face just lit up and she said, "So am I." And then we started talking, we exchanged stories, we had lots of differences, but by the end of a 20-minute conversation, she gave me a big hug, I gave her a big hug, and she went in, but we had this positive connection, we found common ground, and we planted seeds, and we can just share our hearts, and that is the key to turning the tide with climate. We need to show up with all of our friends who are different than us. We need to reach out and say, we're different on some issues, but we know that we want clean air. We know we need to address carbon pollution. We know we want affordable energy. We know that we want affordable housing. We know that our children should be able to get places to live here, right? Addressing climate is the intersection of all those issues, taking care of our communities and centering that over large-scale profits or extraction. We can have enough and all have really good lives without destroying this beautiful place.
The impulse to protect the future for those we love, to protect this planet that we all share, is completely understandable. But there's a risk that we might lose ourselves in the context of that endeavor. Is there a way to integrate climate advocacy work into our lives that can be sustainable?
How do we continue to care for ourselves while doing the hard work of caring for others?
While working to pass this on to those around us.
There is one model that you have to devote 24/7. And if you don't devote 24/7, then you suck or you're immoral or you're indulging or you're something. And I think it's really, really important that we again talk to kids about meaning making. What do they love about their life? What do they love about how they go about their world, their friendships, their music, their studies? Because quite literally everything we do can have climate implications. And whether we sing about climate, whether we study climate, whether we do films, it does not have to look a certain way. And you don't have to prove your viability through individual consumption choices. So when I think about youth who want to be active, the approach I take is always make it relational, spreading good ideas, spreading collaboration. I think that there's a very big problem in the way the narrative of climate is in the media, which is exceedingly disempowering and catastrophic, which doesn't mean that there isn't room and reason to be very, very worried, deeply worried. But the narrative in the media is so disenfranchising and does not speak about collective action, does not foreground mutual solution making or anything like that. That's hardly a motivating place from which to act.
I certainly wholeheartedly relate to the experience of sometimes feeling paralyzed in the scale of it all. What advice would you give to a parent of a five-year-old whose father gives them a book on climate change and can't tolerate reading it?
Okay, so I come back to the attachment lens that I come from and why I think the field of climate psychology is so important and how it weaves with other things I have always cared about in my life. You know, if a kid in the middle of the night wakes up in a nightmare, a parent has a lot of different ways to respond depending on who that parent is. If a parent responds and says, oh, it's nothing, go to bed, that's one response. If the parent responds, oh my God, it's terrifying, what are we going to do? That's another response. And then there's the response, yeah, dreams are really scary sometimes. And I'm here to help you figure out how to go back to sleep. That's the equivalent, I think, of what parenting would be around climate change, is that the most important thing a parent can do is to actually confront the question themselves, is to not avoid, like I did, even though it's deeply understandable and it's scary and we need support as we do it, because the information is not comforting by any stretch of the imagination. But the more that we can take in the reality of it, the more we can manage our own feelings of helplessness, of fear, of catastrophic dread, of whatever image of dystopian ideas that we get that are these hybrids of real and fantastical, given sort of our own stories and histories. The more we have room to process all of that comfortably and without judgment and with a sense of companionship, the more we can be there for our kids. So when they ask questions that start out, they have no idea what they're asking. They don't know the existential crisis at certain stages. At 5 years old, they don't know that when they're asking how come there's no snow this year, that what they're asking is something that is deeply threatening to us as adults, right? Mm-hmm. They're just asking something very, like, it was here last year, why isn't it now, right? We have to be able to tolerate those feelings enough to be able to answer our kid with a sense of curiosity, a sense of openness, a sense of exploration.
So I have a four-year-old on my shoulders as I'm walking right now down the main path from the Rattlesnake Trailhead. I remember being here and working out, doing push-ups on the ground and feeling the sting of the pine needles on my palms. It was amazing to watch kind of the floodplain rise and fall as the winter thawed and the river swelled. Cool to just experience that and share that with the kids. This place was respite in a moment when the world was feeling particularly hostile. We spent days and days and days and days during the pandemic here. It was really special to be so scared in the world and to have this to come to. I think we got it right. Us in Montana, we've had it really lucky. And I really only have Mama Nature to thank for that. Really, it seems to me like all we have is an opportunity to lose it. We're not going to improve upon this. We're just not. We have to take care of it to keep it. For everyone. Can you guys introduce yourselves?
I'm Goldie. I'm 9.
Will you introduce yourself, buddy?
Yeah.
And what's your name?
Damo. If you take one step, it feels like the whole woods changes. Like, every step is like an adventure. If you look up, all you can see is this, like, beautiful blue sky and all the trees. Like, even just closing your eyes and listening, you hear, like, screams of joy in your head.
That was Goldie Birch, along with the rest of Jake's kids.
That was a hard day. I'm not going to lie. It was smoky and hot out, and the kids were fighting. But looking back, it was also fun. We got a lot out of the woods, and I know I'm not alone in that. We'll close with Rebecca and Winona calling us into the bigger picture and sharing how they are fed by their own acts of caretaking.
Oftentimes people ask, what does it mean to be active around issues of climate if we're not going to be able to see the impact of what we do? Or if the scale of what needs to be done is so dramatically bigger than what I individually can contribute to? And in many respects, that's a really fair question. If we could imagine ourselves as being part of a larger story of being alive on this planet, of contributing to the health and welfare of not only ourselves and other people and other non-human lives, that's meaning making, that we are creating a sense of importance to our life that is not about an outcome, but about participating in a larger story and a larger sense of contribution that links us to literally millions of people around the world who are doing this kind of work. And that not only sort of takes the pressure and the burden off, but it also gives you a sense of companionship, a sense of collectivity. I make meaning out of what I'm doing. I have no illusion that my doing this work in this Climate Psychology Alliance is going to stop climate change. I have no illusion that I will see the solutions in my lifetime. And yet I need to feel, as a human being rooted in this world, that I am part of a solution. I find that to be tremendously meaningful. So it is a version of taking action. The kind of action that I'm taking is profoundly relational, is building something larger than myself, is contributing to a larger dialogue that I really, really believe in. And that is enough for me, because I think it's the most honest. And I am learning to accept what's true about my capacity and to lean into that and then do it as much as I can.
There are going to be very few heroes in addressing climate change, but we can weave a new world together like a tapestry, right? We can each grab a thread and start running, hold hands with your neighbor maybe, and just keep going and weaving in and out. And then when we're all at the end of it, we're going to see this big, beautiful world.
Thanks to Rebecca Weston and Winona Bateman for talking with us. To hear more from them, go online to mtpr.org or keep an eye out for bonus materials in your podcast feed. Grounding is produced by Jake Birch, Lauren Korn, and me, Sarah Aronson. Theme song by Brian Ramirez and artwork by April Whirl. Engineering by Chris Moyles, mixed by Jake Birch. Special thanks to Michael Marsalek, Josh Burnham, Noah Epps, Emma Booker, Claire Menahan, Alice Sauter, and Corin Cates Carney.
Thanks also to my kiddos, Goldie, Lauren, and Damo. Love you guys.
Grounding is a production of Montana Public Radio. If you've enjoyed Grounding, please share with your friends, colleagues, and family. You can even rate and review Grounding on your podcast platform. It helps people find us. Thanks again for listening.